This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Say yes to Pure Leaf Tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf Tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Welcome back, everybody. Tobin and Leroy here with you on 560 WQM, and very excited to talk to our next guest. He is the author of Arum and King, Six Decades of Boxing Gold. Marty Corwin, kind enough to join us here. That book is out now. It is looking great. Marty, thanks for the time. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Marty, how do you get into the field of working for the two biggest promoters in the game? That is quite a unique thing that you've run production for both of them. So what was the thing that got you in the door and made you want to get into that field?
Well, kind of a fluke. Now, I've been in boxing now for 32 years. I was doing 110 games a year for Viacom out of Washington, D.C. I was on the road with the Washington Bullets, now the Wizards, of course. Washington Capitals hockey and Orioles baseball. And I was doing, those games for 12 years. Don King had a producer for the 24 years before me who was injured and couldn't return to work. Through a satellite connection, they called me and brought me down for an interview without telling me it was Don King and without telling me it was boxing.
Wow.
So they just kind of made a pitch. They said, we're looking for somebody who does what you do. A guy who can be a producer and a director and a production manager, somebody who wears a lot of hats and great benefits and salary and international travel. You'll be the head of a department. But they didn't tell me it was boxing and they didn't tell me it was Don King. So when I got down there and found out it was DK, I said, well, I don't want to waste your time. I'm not really a boxing guy. I mean, I do these other sports, but I'm not really. And they said, no, we know. We were afraid if we told you it was boxing, you wouldn't come for the interview. So I'll be honest with you, I wouldn't have. So it was just an interesting thing. And then in the end, I mean, I won't tell the story because it's a long one, but it's all in the book. I didn't even know I got hired. After five interviews, because DK didn't make it to the first four, he said to me, he says, well, what will it take to get you in here, brother man? And I said, well, what do you mean, salaries? Yeah, man, I don't know what you make. So I kind of threw out a number. Because I really had no intention of working there. I threw out a number that I thought was a little high. And he said, I like you. And he shook my hand. And he told the head of pay-per-view, he says, make sure Marty's on the plane tomorrow. And I said, no, I got a flight tonight to go back to Maryland. And he says, no, they all started laughing at me. He says, man, asked for a number. You gave him a number. He shook your hand. You work here now.
Wow.
The next morning at 6 a.m., I was on a plane to Mexico City to do a survey for an upcoming Julio Cesar Chavez fight.
Wow.
So that's how I got into it. It was kind of a real fluke. And I was with King for almost 10 years. And then a friend of mine at Top Rank said they had a little problem. A director couldn't make it to an upcoming fight. It was De La Hoya, Ike Corte, in I think it was March 13th or February 13th, 99. And I said, well, I can't help you out because they know I'm a King guy. He said, no, we won't tell anybody you're here. I said, well, okay, please don't, that wouldn't go well.
Right.
And somebody from DKP found out I was there and King fired me for doing a Top Rank fight. And Top Rank said, well, great, you'll do all our fights from now on. And I've been there 26 years now.
Wow. That is bananas. That is like, what was the what just in that time when they did find out, like, did you find out how they found out? Did somebody snitch on you? Did it just go through happenstance? Like, how did that news get to Don King?
It had to be that somebody snitched on me because, you know, I did the fight and I left. And then I went up to New York because we had a fight at Madison Square Garden the next weekend. I think it was the next weekend or maybe 2 weeks. And I'm up in New York on Wednesday of fight week. And DK didn't actually fire me. He sent somebody else to tell me that he's going in a new direction and we don't need you anymore. I'm like, well, I got the TV truck, the crew, everything is lined up. The fight's in 4 days. What do you mean you don't need? I mean, I got everything lined up. They said, no, we're doing it a different way. I'm like, wow, he didn't even fire me himself. So fortunately, you know, I had good contacts and a good network. We were able to get out of paying for everything, even though we canceled it on short notice. And that was it. And I've been, like I say, with Top Rank for the last 26 plus years.
So their rivalry, does it just stem from a business thing, like them just wanting to be the best with each other? Or was there personal things that crossed that made it so, I guess, you know, oil and vinegar with them?
They were just rivals. They were competing for a lot of the same stuff. If you remember in the beginning, Muhammad Ali started both Bob Arum and Don King. Bob Arum, when he left the Justice Department, he worked for Robert Kennedy's Justice Department, and he met up with a promoter by the name of Mallets, Lester Mallets. And Lester brought Bob in to help do a little legal work on one of his upcoming Patterson-Terrell fight, I think it was. And so Bob helped him with, you know, some legal work, and Bob, with the brain of a promoter even then, said, because they were worried about ticket sales, maybe we should get a star black athlete to help, you know, boost sales. That was Bob's suggestion. So he went after Willie Mays, who he knew. And Willie Mays said, I don't know anything about boxing. He said, okay. And he went to Jim Brown next. Jim Brown came in and said to Bob, he says, hey, man, you know, you'd be a good promoter. You should be a promoter. And he and Muhammad Ali decided that they would let Bob become a promoter. Ali was his first client. Jim Brown was a head of marketing or publicity or something, and Bob became a promoter. So, and then when Don King came out of prison after his three-year prison term for manslaughter, he did a benefit in Cleveland at a hospital with Muhammad Ali. And Muhammad Ali said, you know, we don't have any black promoters. Maybe you're the guy. You seem like you have the right attitude. So it was Muhammad Ali who started both of them. So I think the initial rivalry was Muhammad Ali, and then they were both, you know, promoting fights against each other. So that was the initial thing. But even though they weren't friends, and, you know, they both always said, if the deal's right, if it makes sense, we can work together. I can work with anybody. And they did many times up until the last fight they did together, which I directed, was Cotto Mayorga about, I don't know, 2010 or something.
Yep.
So when they're like a couple of old lions, they don't like each other, but when it makes sense, they'll go hunting together.
I'm curious. You know, I live in South Florida, so I drive. You know, I grew up in Deerfield Beach, which was where Don's offices were, and so they always would just drive by it on 95. I think, but like, you know, for somebody my age, I do feel like I kind of came in where Don was almost on the outs. He's done a lot of cards down here in South Florida, but not like as mainstream as he used to be. What do you think the big reason for that was? Because Bob is still going strong. I mean, he's still promoting a young fighter we have down here, Xander Zayas, who I've seen him kind of guide that career along.
Love Xander.
Oh, he's a great kid. I mean, he's you know, just a gem of a guy. But why, you know, why is Bob, why was he able to maintain while Don was kind of on the outs around these times?
Well, the reason is clearly that Don lost me. I mean, that was...
Hey, I believe you, man, if you want to say.
No, I do talk about that in the book. In my opinion, the main difference between these two, there's a lot of similarities between these two guys. Their work ethic, unbelievable hours these guys put in, and the abilities they have, because, you know, people that see these guys at a press conference or getting in the ring after a fight, they think that's the job of being a promoter, and that's a minuscule portion of the job. But I talk about there's a lot of similarities between these two guys, despite coming from very different backgrounds. But the difference between the two, in my opinion, is that while Bob Arum trusted some great boxing people to do their jobs, he gave them authority. Guys like Carl King and his boxing heads, boxing operations, and Brad Jacobs, heads of event production, and his Hall of Fame matchmakers, Bruce Trampler and Brad Goodman. He trusts these guys to do what they do and take care of the company. And then top of that list is Todd DeBuff. He, you know, kind of groomed his stepson Todd DeBuff, and then he became the president of the company. And Todd has moved the company forward. Top Rank has evolved. Todd DeBuff has become a brilliant boxing businessman. He, you know, did the deal with ESPN. He was the first, in my opinion, in the business to recognize the importance of social media. He had Top Rank gearing up a long time ago for social media and the potential that it had. So that was Todd DeBuff. So Bob trusted these people to do what they do. Don, on the other hand, brilliant as he is, and Don King is one of the smartest men I've ever met. I mean, when I wasn't prepared for that when I met him the first time. Don is brilliant. He, however, had his hand in everything. Every part of the operation, Don had to have his hand in controlling it. He didn't give other people the ability to do the job without his supervision. He had to be on top of everything. So I think that was the big difference. While Don started to wind down, the company started to wind down. But when Bob Arum started to wind down a little, the company was still growing and evolving.
But still impressive. Like, even at his age, you see him ringside at these, Bob, you see him at, like, ringside at these shows. And I just
and
find
he shows
that
up for the first fight. Bob's at the fight, at the event, and he's there for the first fight, not just showing up for the main event.
So is that just a matter of, like, that's just in him? He just doesn't feel like he's ever, you know, going to slow down until I guess it's just done? Because he just,
When I talked to him about that, he said, "Why should I retire? Why do I have to, as long as I can make it?" He said, "As long as I can get on the plane and get to the event, why should I retire?" He loves it. I mean, Bob, you know, literally, he got into it, you know, kind of, you know, Bob's career in law could have easily been his entire career for his entire life.
Mm-hmm.
He was introduced to boxing in 1962, working for the Department of Justice. He was sent to confiscate the purses from the first Patterson-Liston fight, because there was some controversy over what Roy Cohn, who was the promoter, was going to do with the money. He wanted to take it to another country, and he was doing something funny. So the Justice Department confiscated the purse, and they sent Bob Arum to do it. And that was his first contact in boxing. That's where he met Lester Malitz, and years later he got into boxing. So he just kind of fell in love with boxing. I mean, as he got more and more into it, he certainly was tied to Muhammad Ali, and he realized what a great person Muhammad Ali was getting into it, and he was just hooked. I mean, he just, as he watched fights, you know, over the years, he just more and more got to love it. When you hear him talk about great fights, and he always said that Hagler Hearns, he thought was the best fight he ever saw. That was April 15th of 85 at Caesar's Palace. Bob said that was the greatest fight he ever saw. I mean, but when he talks about it, he really lights up. He loves the sport.
I'm curious, this is kind of a layered thing, Marty, but when you're sitting here and you're seeing the sport change back when they're introducing, like, pay-per-view and things like that, like, so take, for somebody my age, can you kind of take me to, like, the golden age of boxing going into this new thing where people are gathering on Saturday night, they're paying $70 to watch a Mike Tyson fight? Like, how did these guys go into that path of the way the boxing business was?
Well, boxing has evolved and changed dramatically in just the last 40 years, you know, that I've been in television, but certainly, you know, going back even further, you know, the first pay-per-view was in 1947, first boxing pay-per-view, which means going to a movie theater to watch it, was Joe Louis against Jersey Joe Walcott in 1947. And so pay-per-views started in movie theaters, and that evolved into then satellite broadcasts. And Frazier 2, I believe, was the first live complete satellite broadcast pay-per-view. But when Bob Arum got into the sport, they had fights on over-the-air TV, like CBS and others, ABC, Wide World of Sports would show them. And then he started in 1980 a deal with ESPN, the fledgling cable company. And boxing evolved onto cable. Years later, it evolved onto prime pay cable, like HBO and Showtime and that series. And then we watched HBO get out of boxing, we watched Showtime get out of boxing, and then the introduction of streaming, which is good for the consumer because there's more boxing on television now than there's ever been. When I always think it's funny when somebody says boxing is dying. There's more boxing on television than there's ever been because it's going direct to consumer. So it's become easier to distribute and there's more out there. So it'll continue to evolve. Who knows what's going to happen, next, but it does continue to evolve.
Is there a way though, like as these guys as promoters, like what do they think was the best way? Like, was there a commonality between both of them to take a star and make them mega stars when they knew they had somebody? Like like this guy has the X factor. What do they think was the best method if there was a contrast in styles of taking that guy from a good fighter, but a good fighter to a star that people want to pay for?
You said,
what is Dax? Are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen. Yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for.
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge. Trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
That's exactly right. The being a promoter, the way to succeed as a promoter was to have a pay-per-view fighter. The regular fights, the ongoing weekly fights, monthly fights, whatever, they build fighters up to get championships, but it's that pay-per-view fighter that really moves you into the black ink. I mean, you have to lose money on a few events to get to that pay-per-view. And Bob Arum, when Muhammad Ali retired, people said, oh, that's the end of Bob Arum. Well, no, he had, he had Hagler Hearns and eventually Eric Morales and Oscar De La Hoya, came in and was his next pay-per-view star. And then after Oscar De La Hoya, he had a few other fighters leading up to Manny Pacquiao as a pay-per-view star. So yeah, that is the way it works. Same thing with Don King. I mean, Don, who kind of got into it with Rumble in the Jungle with Foreman and Ali, he had guys like Larry Holmes, who was his pay-per-view star, and eventually Julio Cesar Chavez, and moving from one to the next the same way. That's kind of the model that a promoter kind of follows. The pay-per-view guy is what gives you black ink.
Working, so you mentioned that, Bob kind of let his employees do his thing and Don did not. Like, when you're directing a broadcast, is he more involved in that with you? Like, is there something like if he didn't like it, he'd want you ever go into the control room and change something with you more so? Or were they both like that? Like, allowing you to do your job, how did they differ?
I am the luckiest guy in the world. I have been doing this now in boxing for 32 years. Neither Don King or Bob Arum ever came into the control room or made comments about how I do what I do, or decided to question why I did transmission this way. Maybe we should do it. So I am the luckiest employee ever because, you know, I do have autonomy. Now, they would look at the budgets after the fact and say, you know, can we get it cheaper? That kind of thing. But no, I did not. They did not, neither one of them really stood behind my back and questioned how or why I was doing what. I'm not 100% sure they even knew what I did, but
they knew they needed you.
Lucky guy.
Is there a biggest misconception about either one that you feel like this book
absolutely
sheds light on?
The biggest misconception about Don King is people not realizing exactly how smart the man is. Don is the smartest man I ever met. And he is a brilliant businessman and he has an unbelievable work ethic. But then he becomes a different person when it's time to get in front of the camera. He goes from, you know, a Gordon Gekko, you know, Fortune 100 CEO. All of a sudden, he stands up, puts on the jacket, takes the flags out, puts a cigar in, and becomes that guy. And that's, you know, he's two people. So people don't necessarily realize. Very briefly, I'll tell you that when my wife, who has her law degree from Pepperdine and used to work in the tax division of Price Waterhouse with some super high-powered CEOs in L.A., and I'm telling you that just to let you know that her experience is valid, she met Don King the first time at a press conference. And we were in the back of the room at a back table, and Don was at a back table next to us. And he's talking to guys like Kirk Kerkorian and the head of Showtime, and they were talking about some business deals. And you can't help hearing him, his voice carries. She's listening to this and going, wow, this guy is like an unbelievable CEO type. And she's hearing all this. And then Mike Marley, his PR guy, went over to him and said, DK, it's Showtime. And like I just said, he stood up, put on the jacket, grabbed the flags, and my wife said it was a form of de-evolution of man. like that chart where the guy, you know, starts to walk upright, the different images of man. She said it was the opposite. He went from Gordon Gekko to Mr. Magoo.
Yeah, that was...
Bob Arum, by contrast, who, you know, I've said many times, is like one of my favorite uncles. Bob is the same guy in person as he is on camera. He's very sincere. He's very... direct and honest about what he thinks. And, you know, sometimes he's gotten into trouble by saying things people said, no, you shouldn't have said that. But that's him. He's the same guy in front or behind, you know, the camera. So the misconception for both of them is what it takes to be a promoter. And I have a whole chapter on what is a promoter because people always ask me. And I have a metaphor about what promoting is about. And both of these guys, they work around the clock and they have to combine the skills of an attorney, a street hustler, and a child psychologist to do their jobs. So the job of being a promoter, very few people know what it takes.
Yeah. Do you think it's got an even bigger misconception these days just because it feels like, you know, everybody is just trying to get in the game of it? Like, you know, it's kind of like a fad these days of people trying to put together boxing events, even people who aren't boxers and just thinking that they can just make it happen. So if somebody who's been in this for decades, what do you make of like everybody kind of trying to stick their beak into it?
It's very different now. And that's why my original title for the book was Arum and King, End of an Era. And I meant by that there will never be another Don King or Bob Arum because it's not done like that anymore. The business isn't like that anymore. You're not going to see another promoter do what they do. It started to change significantly when people like HBO decided they wanted to control the fighters. They, in essence, wanted to become promoters. And so broadcasters kind of got into it and kind of, you know, started to want to control the promotion. And then, of course, came the internet and social media, and that changed everything. Then you got guys, then you got carnival events, you know. You know, I don't want to mention Jake Paul by name, but you got, you know, some of these events that completely different, almost nothing to do with boxing. Mm-hmm. They're just kind of a carnival sideshow. They make a tremendous amount of money, and I give full credit to the people that are producing them because they're making a fortune, but it's not really about the boxing, is it?
I'm curious about that just to circle back on the network thing, because you mentioned that, look, these guys had a rivalry, but they would make the deal. Did that get screwed up because TV guys wanted too much control, you think?
No, it just changed. It turned different. You know, a lot of money in these big pay-per-view events, and the network said, you know, we'll control it. We'll decide. And they made changes to boxing because of that. Like, you know, HBO, for example, they ignored the WBA, IBF, WBO, and all of that. They didn't even refer to them in championship fights. They called the fights by the weight. They would say, you know, it's the 160-pound fight rather than the WBA middleweight. You know, they would just, you know, that changed, you know, boxing. So broadcast networks taking a little more control just kind of changed things. I can't even say absolutely for the better or for the worse, just different. I mean, boxing has evolved just like everything else. And what'll happen next? People are always asking me, oh, with all these streaming services, you know, what's going to happen? I don't know, but whatever is best for the boxing fan, meaning you need people to buy it. So you're going to give them what they want. And it's probably good for the fans.
From a standpoint of developing fighters, I don't know if that's a Todd thing or a Bob thing, but we mentioned a guy like Xander. You know, I've seen him since he was 16 years old, get and just kind of bring along the career. Now it's like he's 22, and now we're probably getting to title fight time. But what is that patience like as a promoter? That, you know, hey, he's going to fight on the undercard. This is our next big thing. To you decide a guy is, hey, this guy draws. We want to see him on the co-main event. And like, I guess, what's that process like? How long does it take? Does it vary between fighter, between, you know, we've invested in somebody from this age and now we know he's ready to make the jump to that? And specifically, I guess, these days, because I'm sure it's changed from a time frame, but like in this day and age, how long it takes to groom a guy from a prospect to a guy people want to see in title fights?
Well, you've just hit on a very important, you know, difference between promoters doing the promotion and broadcast networks doing the promotion. And this is just my opinion. I'm not on that side of the business. I'm just a TV guy. But my opinion, based on what I've seen, the promoters' jobs were always to bring guys along, like you just said. And you needed to get a guy who was, I describe boxing as being, you know, having like a AAA league, a major leagues, and an all-star league. The AAA league is the weekly fights, like USA Network used to do Tuesday night fights or the weekly ESPN series, where guys who were not quite ready for championships were brought along and were marketed and were improved and gotten ready to do championship fights. Then you got the guys in championship fights, and that's the major leagues. And then you got the giant pay-per-view fighters, that's the All-Star League. So some of these young kids, I love these young kids. You mentioned Xander Zayas, I'm a big fan. Keyshawn Davis, he fought, you know, Berinchik. A couple of weeks ago I did that fight, and this is a guy who was brought along beautifully by Bob Arum to get his first title fight. And in his first title fight, he won the title. And this guy's, you know, got nothing but, you know, blue skies in front of him. This is a terrific job. But the television networks, by contrast, in my opinion, and I can get some angry texts from this, I'm sure, they were only interested in guys the public knew, fighting guys the public knew they could beat. And it always bothered me. You know, they weren't as interested in bringing a guy along to become the next pay-per-view fighter. They just wanted name recognition fighters. And in America, that often meant, you know, heavyweights guys knew fighting hotel waiters so that they could see him win. You know, this is just my opinion. But unless it was a, you know, a mandatory fight where you couldn't help having number one go against number two, you often had mismatches. And the idea was just to put somebody on the card whose name everybody knew and might tune in just for that name.
How do you think, you know, doing so much work and spending so much time with these guys, what do you think is going to be the legacy, I guess, of both of them? Because it, like I said, it feels like Bob is getting to go out more on his own terms than it is Don. I mean, Don's still doing shows down here and whatnot, and like you said, I've interviewed him, I think, about a year ago for a show down here, and he can still turn it on, but I think there's a difference between being on ESPN and whatever website he's streaming on. So do you feel like that's going to be a part of the legacy, or do you feel like they're two titans too much so that they'll both go down with the respect they deserve?
I think the legacy is what they've achieved already, their accomplishments. Nobody else did it. These guys have unbelievable numbers of amazing events. you know, that Don King for two or three decades and Bob for six decades. You know, when people talk about Bob Arum and they talk about the Ali fights, these amazing fights, you know, the Ali Frazier fights and like I said, his first fight, Ali versus George Shivalo in 66, was Bob said that was his most difficult event of all. 10,000 fights later, his number one event was the most difficult of all. Wow. But there's so much history involved in what they've accomplished. The Leonard Duran fights for Bob, the Hagler Hearns. I mean, so many amazing fights. And there's other, you know, historical fights, like when Bob Arum brought Big John Tate down. I think it was 85. He brought Big John Tate down to Pretoria in South Africa to fight Jerry Coetzee. There were 80,000 people there, and it was the first time ever in South Africa they suspended apartheid for the event. How big is that? I mean, this is part of the legacy. This is what people will remember about these two. Don King, the Rumble in the Jungle, the Thrill in Manila, the history involved. And I try to bring that into the book. The history involved in the Thrill in Manila fight, for example, in 75. There's a lot of side stories to that fight. Both Don King and Bob Arum thought they had deals with Marcos outside the fight. Bob went in a casino deal and Don in a sugar deal. And didn't happen, but those stories, even if you know the fights, if you're a boxing purist and a diehard boxing fan, you know the fight, you may not have known those stories. Or you may not have known that Wilt Chamberlain was going to fight Muhammad Ali. Customato was going to train him. Wow. That fight was set for the Houston Astrodome. And then it was scuttled when Bob told Ali to don't say anything to Wilt because he hasn't signed the contract yet. And Wilt came to the press conference and bent at the waist to get through the doorway. And Ali yells, "Timber!" And Wilt turned around, found a phone, called Jack Kent Cook, made his deal for the Lakers, and left. Those kind of stories. There's a lot of history. And I think the legacy is what they've accomplished, which nobody else came close to, and I don't think anybody's going to do again.
Go get it. Arum and King, Six Decades of Boxing Gold by Marty Corwin. Marty, thanks for the time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.